さ、簡単なことさ、2つの波長をクロスさせるなんて、夜空をかけるなら燃える青森を乗せて、悲しみと憎しみを打ち落としてゆけ、お前の胸にもなるな、まっすぐ受け止めて、
It's Tuesday, June 9, and we're back for another episode of Macross Speaker Podcast.
June 9, 2015.
Thank you, guy. I keep forgetting what year it is, Renato.
Well, who knows? People who are listening to this in the far-flung future might be wondering.
Well, this is somewhat of a gorilla episode. Do you want to explain where we are? Gorilla, not gorilla.
Oh, sorry. You want to explain where we are? Oh, we are in the screening theater of the Suginami Animation Museum in downtown Tokyo.
And why are we here?
We're here because it's the 10th anniversary of Aquarion, another important reason why it's the year 2015 and we should mention it. The 10th anniversary of Aquarion, and therefore there is an exhibition here at the Animation Museum in Suginami. And of course we've been looking at some displays of golden Chogokins, and some of the keyframes, some of the layouts, some of the character design sheets, and some of the mecha model sheets, and a whole bunch of other really cool stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of a small exhibit, but yeah, they got a bunch of Genga, and
yeah, they don't really have anything that really blows me away, but it's nice, and it's you can at least experience the. What scale is that? I don't know. Like the really large Aquarion model that they made.
Oh,
the
yeah.
The statue.
Yeah, it's been at a
it's
bunch
taller,
of
It's taller animation. Than me, so it's pretty tall.
It's been at a bunch of animation conventions.
Yeah.
Around
this, the one they have here is the original Aquarion. When I went over, well, you went as well, separately,
yeah.
To the Anime Japan event a couple of months ago, they had it back-to-back with one of the other ones,
right?
Like it was the old
Evil
and the Evil.
I
guess
Evil?
It was the Evil because
it could have been Logos because
they hadn't revealed it yet.
They revealed Logos there at that event, but I don't think. Yeah. Oh, I could be wrong. It could have been Logos. I'll have to check my pictures.
I don't think it was. I don't think they've made one.
But so, look, this is, I'd have to say, at least the third time we've tried to sit down and have this talk, and just life has been really busy, and things have gotten to the point that we have sequestered ourselves in a currently unused screening room without the knowledge of the operators of the premise with about
really
50 minutes before it closes to have a quick chat.
Behind us, though, is a genuine animation multiplane camera. If you've never seen these things before, they are enormous. They go right up to the ceiling of the room.
Yeah.
And it's really quite stunning. You know, it's almost like a lost art form because, as you should know if you listen to this podcast, cells and these things, they're not photographed anymore. It's
really?
All composited on computers. I've heard
that's
called
that
computers.
CGI stuff the kids keep talking about.
Yeah. CGI.
So, the thing we're here at this event to talk about is an event. Is another exhibit. Which happened a while back, and I've been wanting to talk about it for a while because I felt it was really worth talking about.
Hey, Gwen, does that mean that in a year from now, we'll talk about this event that we're at right now? I guess we just did that.
Exactly.
In 2 minutes.
Yeah. So, the event I'm talking about, of course, is the Takani exhibit that was on late last year.
Takani Yoshiyuki.
Yoshiyuki Takani. Now, I suppose you'd best start off explaining who Yoshiyuki Takani is. If you've seen any Macross art, mecha art from the 80s, chances are you've seen his work. A lot of people don't seem to know his name, though.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. But there's reasons for that.
Well, it was kind of that era as well. People didn't go as... a lot of artists didn't get credited on box art like they are today. But there was this exhibit for Takani. It was done last year, 2014, from October 3rd to December 25th, at this tiny little display, a little museum, the Yayoi Museum in Bunkyoku, which is out the back of
the Yayoi Museum, not the Yaoi Museum.
The which
way.
One?
the Yayoi Museum. If you get this, if you get the pronunciation wrong, it might be the Boys Love Museum, right?
Well,
the Yayoi Museum.
Is that another exhibit you'd like to go to, Renato?
I'd love to. Yeah.
That hints the love in the Boys Love.
Yes. We're here at the Aquarian Evil, so it's just one step away.
Kimochi! So, this exhibit was to celebrate 60 years of Takani's work, because he's been doing box art and illustrations for 60 odd years.
Yeah,
which, as you may notice, is a lot longer than Macross has been around, so his career does precede Macross by some time.
Yeah. Two Macrosses worth.
And, you know, of course we know him from Macross, but what else did he do art for?
Well, first of all, you should say, like, which are the pieces that people would recognize, just so they have an idea.
Well, let's do some back and forth on some of these. That iconic picture of the SDF-1 taking off?
Yeah, that's probably the main one.
With the Valkyries coming in to it?
Yeah, and like the mountains in the background.
Right.
Right? That has been used in Robotech, it's been used in Macross, it's been used everywhere, and people online to this day still share it on Twitter and on Facebook, and they all think it's fantastic and amazing. Like, the whole... It really shows the scale, just the size and magnitude of the Macross as it's lifting off.
Right. There's also a couple of Batroid picks he's done.
The VF-1J.
It's noticeable because the gun pod looks a little small, and it's got the strap on the VF-1J.
Right.
It's got the strap around the arm, which always looked odd. Even as a kid, I thought it looked kind of odd.
That's the funny thing about Takani's art. Like, a lot of the robot proportions look off, but it looks off for that design, and yet the whole image itself, the picture itself, looks right, you know?
Right.
Like, it's almost like he's creating his own world.
Well, he has a style to his art which is very much that old pseudo-realism by putting really, really high amounts of detail and texturing across all his stuff. Things look mechanical chunky.
Yeah, but it's not hyper-realistic, you know what I mean? Like, he's not making it look like a photograph.
Right.
It still looks like...
The things still have the anime proportions for the most part. Yeah. Right. He's done, you know, the fighter mode of the VF-1S, I think, is a fairly well-known picture of his.
Yeah, maybe. I think the Armored Batroid is probably the most famous one, because the Cabbage Patch Kids... The Cabbage Patch... Pail Kids.
Garbage Pail Kids,
ripped it off, right?
Yeah.
Roybot.
So, he's done a lot more than just Macross, of course. And actually, anime only... As we found out this exhibit... And it was an eye-opener for me. Anime only took up a relatively small part of his career, but given how obsessive anime fans are, it tends to be the part he's better known for. So among anime, he did stuff for Zabungle, Gundam, Dumbine...
And your favorite?
Macross?
No, Omega Boost. Duh, Macross, what the hell is that?
Well, I haven't gotten to games yet.
Oh, okay.
He also did the novel covers for the Japanese translation of Lensman, which I thought were quite interesting. Right. That was just in the 80s as well. In the 90s, he did some Macross 7 art, which I was unaware he'd done until we went to the exhibit.
Oh, really? No, I knew, because they were the box art for the Wave vinyl kits, garage kits.
That's cool.
And they looked really... it looked really interesting, because he had the VF-19 Kai with the sound booster, but with the wings out.
Right.
The sound booster wings.
Yeah, I was just trying to pull a picture up on my phone, but hell, you remember it, apparently. So, he had the sound boosters on it, which was great. What else did he have there? He had the Nightmare? Oh, no, it was
you mean at the exhibit?
At the exhibit, yeah.
No, I don't
he had
remember.
Two or three different Macross 7 Valks. And
he had some Emerald Force stuff.
Right, right. And then when we get into things like video games, of course, as you said, Omega Boost, he did two amazing pieces from Omega Boost, which were, one was reused a lot as cover art in various territories, another one was an insert poster in an issue of Dengeki PlayStation, apparently, which I've got to track down now. He did Metal Slug and Power Dolls.
Power Dolls, yeah.
Yeah. So...
And like... The thing about his art, you know, you've mentioned his anime work and his video game work. The thing about his art is, and I've heard this from a lot of people as well, and it's not just me who feels it, it makes these shows look much better than they really are. Because
grippy...
I'm no Zavungle fan.
Okay.
Okay. But I was really interested in checking out the show because of all that gritty stuff that he was drawing.
And he even makes, like, the feet of... Like, there's some shots where he shows the Zavungle walking, and it shouldn't look as good walking as it does.
Yeah, yeah.
But somehow it looks realistic,
yeah,
almost.
Yeah, he totally makes it work.
His Zakus are also really realistic looking,
yeah,
that way.
Yeah,
they're really,
yeah,
nice. So, who is this guy? He was born in Gunma Prefecture, where I used to live, in 1935, which tells you how old he
where
is.
Where you used to live?
I used to live in Gunma, yeah. And originally he started doing illustrations in boys' magazines in the 50s. Now, I have to make a note here that he is an illustrator, not a manga artist. It's an important distinction to make. Not unlike Tenjin, his role in doing box art. These stories were things like war stories, science fiction, naval battles, cowboys and Indians, murder mysteries, and he would do key visuals or cover art for these boys, young boys' stories. When he started doing classic model box art, he was doing things like tanks, warships, fighter planes, rockets, for companies such as Imai, Nichimo, and more importantly for this exhibit, Tamiya. He's also done things like James Bond. He did one of the cars from the old 60s James Bond. He did the Batmobile. He also did a good Godzilla illustration, which was kind of interesting. So, look, chances are if you've built a plastic model kit in the 80s or even 90s, you've come across his work, whether or not. You realize it, regardless of whether you're an anime fan.
Yeah.
Right.
It's funny. I've known about him for a really long time, but I never had any of the illustration books. So I didn't know much about the guy.
Mm-hmm.
The first time that I read about him, about his youth and how he got into doing model box art stuff, was when I bought a copy of Valkyrie's Second Sortie by Hidetaka Tenjin. Because one of the things about that book is that he said, all right, I'll do another book, but I'm sick and tired of just answering questions in an interview. Tenjin said this, right? Because
mm-hmm.
At the back of the first book, you know, there's an interview with him and how did he get into Macross and what about his work on Zero and stuff like that. But Tenjin said, if I can interview Takani, then let's do it. And so they went to his house and they interviewed him, and there's lots of photographs
it's
of them together.
It's a huge interview too.
Yeah, but I was going to translate it. But
yeah.
I never got around to it.
It's on my list.
Yeah.
It's on the back. It's a long list.
I also have to translate the Miyatake interview that comes with the Orgus toy, the new one.
Oh.
Like, just came out. Did I tell you about that one?
The one you mentioned, I believe, in the VF2SS podcast about how he was working on all these projects when
yeah.
his father passed away.
Right. It's quite an eye-opening interview,
right.
That one.
Looking forward
anyway,
to it.
Anyway, so, yeah, I mean, if you can check out the interview at the back, and you speak Japanese and you read Japanese, of Second Sortie, Valkyries 2. Not Valkyries 2, just Valkyries Second Sortie. Right?
Yeah.
You should check it out. That's also more about Takani than it is about Tenjin, really. But it's interesting to see the relationship between the two of them, because Tenjin definitely sees him as a kind of a master of the art and a sensei and
right.
Kind of a goal that he's looking to meet.
Well,
towards.
Tenjin has certainly cited Takani as a major influence,
of course,
multiple
yeah.
times over the years.
Yeah.
And there was also a really good interview that Tim Eldred did with him
yeah.
where he asked him to point out several artists that influenced him, and Takani was the main one, of course.
Yeah. Do you remember when we went to I think it was like the book event for the launch of the Second Sortie.
Second Sortie.
Yeah, launch of Second Sortie.
Where he had the actual piece he owns.
Yeah. So he again, he's supposed to be plugging his own book, but really he's just talking and gushing about Takani.
He owns
right.
a Takani original, and it's a relatively well-known original, too. Was it the Gerwalk Ostrich was the one he owned, I think? Or
no, I think it's the Armored Valkyrie, isn't it?
Oh, was it the Armored Valkyrie? I thought it was an ostrich.
I think he owns more than one.
Yeah.
To be sure.
That could be right.
But the one he brought, I'm sure, was the Armored Valkyrie. And you know, he was asking Takani about it. Oh, how did you feel when you were writing, when you were drawing this? And he was like, oh, I don't remember. Because,
yeah,
you know, Takani was 30 years ago.
This will be it's something I'll get to in a moment, which is Takani's memory, or lack thereof at this
Yeah,
this
well,
thing.
What do you expect?
So, this exhibit, apart from being held for several weeks, there was a talk show and a signing. Not a sketch event, because he's no spring chicken anymore. But just for the listeners, Renato, could you describe briefly what you saw, like, what was the setup for this this exhibit when you got
I
in
think
there.
I should describe first of all my my disappointment at not being able to get an autograph, because there were two. This event went on for several weeks, right?
Yeah.
It was a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
There were two opportunities to get
two signings,
an autograph, right? And the thing is that you had to go, and it's one of those ones where you had to get a ticket and then come back in
the
afternoon.
You had to go on a certain day
and
be the first 50 people to buy something
And
get a ticket and then come back.
And I was going to do that for the first one. We all went on the second one, right?
Right.
I was going to do that for the first one, but actually I fractured my rib.
What?
And I was, that's a whole other story. It involves Sean Lennon, John Lennon's son, the real one. Anyway, that's another story. But I'm here with a fractured rib, and I'm like, I really want to go to Takani. Who knows? How old is he?
He's 80.
35? I can't do the math.
Takani?
Yeah.
He's 80-something.
I cannot see him again, you know? He's not going to do another one of these. Not anytime soon, anyway.
Hmm.
Or later. So, like, what am I going to do? And I couldn't make it over there. And I'm like, all right, I'll just go to the second one. But they hadn't decided on a date for the second one. And in the
right.
end, they decided on doing it on a Saturday. But I work in the mornings on Saturday. So even if I was able to go to the signing, I wouldn't be able to go to be the first one in line to get the ticket to go to the signing. So,
well, Adrian was unable, unfortunately, to get a signing ticket as well. Because when they were giving out signing tickets, he was running a marathon.
Oh, wow.
As you do.
The Tokyo Marathon.
The Tokyo Marathon, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Which is impressive.
But yeah, so when we ended up all going together with Tim Eldred and the gang.
Right, we met you guys. Like, I ran into you guys when I was there. I was there a little earlier because the talk show and whatnot. So it was really crowded then. Was that the first time you...
It was really crowded because of the people in line,
the talk
right?
Because of the talk show.
First of all, the venue was tiny.
Well, this is the thing. Describe the venue.
Well, the venue is the Yayoi Museum. I've been there a couple of times earlier. They always have really cool stuff, but it's usually something to do with the Showa period.
Right.
Not the Yayoi period, ironically enough. So the last time I'd gone was to see I forgot her name. Mizuki Ado or something like that.
Okay.
She does like the really cute kind of illustration. But anyway, it's the Showa period stuff. So.
Okay.
And so that's how I knew that, like, these are really two museums joined together. It's the it's that one plus the Takehisa Yumeji Museum.
Yeah.
And Takehisa Yumeji is a really, really famous artist from, like, the Taisho period. I hope I'm right. It's either the Meiji or the Taisho period, or early Showa. So it's very interesting in terms of, like, modern... I don't mean modern art in the kind of like the abstract modern art. I mean like post-war or even pre-war art in Japan. Like post-westernization period, post-Meiji art with lots of Western influences. It's really an interesting transition period because after this period is really when manga became an industry and, you know, you got the kind of... Tezuka style drawings, but this is like in a transition period before it became all that. So this kind of art is very, very interesting and relates to my research, so I tend to go over here quite often. This museum, however, is only two floors and there's really two spaces,
right. And they're both quite tiny.
They're not big. They have like glass panels on the three walls,
and then a display case in the center.
Yeah, in the center there's just a
glass and table
glass thing.
Kind of.
And
that's the same on
the second
two floors.
The second floor, I think, is the same, right?
It's the same, yeah. And
yeah,
when I
the
got there,
I
didn't know there were two floors. I thought the first floor was it, and I was like, "Wow, this is a letdown." But
because
all the anime stuff was on the second floor.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. The first floor was just like his early works,
right?
And the stuff that was in the case in the middle. Were some of it were sketchbooks like from when he was a child,
right?
Like
yeah,
he was
like
barely
like
10, and he was drawing like ridiculously detailed scenarios of like Western cowboys and Indians kind of thing.
He's like drawing samurai swords and stuff. And there's a photo of him like probably in his teens with an actual katana and sketching it. But that it was a tiny venue, and a lot of the stuff on that floor was Tamiya. And a lot of his early stuff, his battleships, his warships, all his military model kits. And the reason why this is the case, there was all this Tamiya stuff. Not so much Imai or Nichimon. That's because Tamiya knows how to keep their original art in good condition. They store it well. Imai and Nichimon, not so much. In fact, when we got to the second floor and looked at the Macross stuff, not only was there not as much as I was expecting, many of them had little notices down the bottom, on loan from private collection.
Oh, yeah.
So over the years, a lot of his stuff, those classic Macross pieces, have been lost or ended up in the hands of private collectors. In fact, a few years back, I don't know if you remember, on Macross World, Sean found a listing on Yahoo Auction. Someone had just suddenly spammed it with half a dozen, no, more than that, like a dozen pieces of original Takani art, and they ended up going for these astronomical prices. I dare say that could be where Tengen got one from.
Yeah,
Tengen, you're part of the problem. So, a lot of the
art... Here's the solution, you've got to buy it all back.
Well, this is why, if you look at the Takani art books that are out there, and there's not many, none of them have an exhaustive collection of all of his Macross stuff. In fact, even the new art book that came out with this exhibit has all this other stuff he did, and about 4 pages tops of Macross stuff.
Yeah.
So I really hope they eventually get a book out there which has more of his Macross stuff, if possible.
Well, that's all across the board. I mean, it's not just Nichimo and Ari and these people. Like, if you go to that shop in Nakano on Broadway and
right,
floor,
right.
Fourth floor or something,
yeah,
where it's got all the cells.
Yeah,
I saw the cover of the This Is Animation Macross Plus cell.
Okay.
The
Hunken floor.
It's enormous.
Yeah.
It's really detailed. It's beautiful. There's the one with all the missiles, you know, the YF-19, YF-21.
How much was that going for?
Too much. Much more than I had in my pocket at the time. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't there next time I went. So
yeah,
now it's in the hands of some private collector. We'll never see it again.
Yeah, these
Where's the, you know, so whenever they advertise these, it's the Macross Gengakuten, you know, it's the Macross keyframe exhibition, whatever. So what? They might have some interesting stuff, but it won't be full of all the stuff that we've been wanting to see.
It won't be comprehensive, because this stuff is out there, unfortunately. But, so, when you visited, and I must point out, just the first floor was all his military stuff, and like space, James Bond, Batman, this kind of stuff. Not to mean it was, that's not to say it was any less interesting. Just looking at the detail in his work was fascinating. And early stuff from his manga cover, comic covers he did, like he'd do these Western covers where you'd have a cowboy hanging out of a window of a train with like a 6-shot shotgun.
Yeah.
Like 6 barrels on it.
Yeah.
Like the kind of thing that only the Japanese would kind of... The flights are fancy, you know. The kind of science fiction and Western stuff, I it wasn't really my generation, it was more my father's, but I definitely got some of the hand-me-downs growing up.
Right,
and
right.
It kind of...
You do
some
feel
bells.
Some nostalgia.
Yeah,
that, yeah,
some certain amount. So you came and there was a talk show, right?
No, I
no?
didn't.
Were you there for the talk show? Or?
No.
Because you're there with Tim.
No.
So that wasn't when he was
the
doing the actual
show.
Talk show. Okay. So when he
I
did.
I think I missed it. They had already started doing the signing.
Oh, okay. You got there that late?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because we walked from God knows where. I don't know why. It's like Adrian was saying, yeah, it's just around the corner. But, like. I don't know.
It is kind of out in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, no. We were walking away. No, maybe I'm just confusing it with the walk back.
So we had this talk show, right? And I've got to start off going back to a point you made, and that is, with all due respect to Takani's age, his memory is not what it once was. And I kind of felt sorry for the... We had basically Takani and an MC, this lady who they must have hired, and they would walk around each floor of the museum, and he'd be giving commentary. And... there were a lot of things where she'd be like, you know, what about this, or do you remember what you had in mind when you drew this, and he just had no idea. He couldn't remember a lot of it, but he did come up with some interesting points.
I can't remember what I drew 30 years ago, so what do you expect?
He was talking about how in his generation of artists there was a general lack of direction from the editors of magazines, whereas these days you hear editors kind of micromanage lot of artists.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And for example, if he was drawing a cover for a manga or a boys anthology magazine, he was asked, you know, does he prefer fighter planes or warships, because he's got a fair amount of both, and he said it wasn't his preference. He knew the editors, and so it depended on whether this editor was more of a naval kind of guy or an Air Force kind of guy.
Yeah.
And depending on that editor's preferences, he would just go ahead and draw one or the other, and stuff tended to get approved pretty quick as a result.
Yeah.
So he was also talking about how with Macross, in a similar manner, he wasn't given much in the way of detail. In fact, most of the anime he drew for, he of course had never seen the anime for them. Often he'd get design docs, you know, before the shows had finished being put together, let alone aired. So with Macross, he said he didn't really know how these mecha were supposed to look. And a great example of this is the Gerwalk, because there's that illustration he did of a Gerwalk where the arms were still folded in and just the legs are out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's somewhat notorious. And he was like, I had no idea how the thing transformed. I'd look at the line art and do my best to try to imagine this and how it would work. And he didn't have much direction at all. He was just throwing his designs and said, here, go together and go and put us a model box art together, some box art together. So I thought that was really, really interesting compared to the amount of micromanagement you hear today about, you know, getting Bandai to sign off on a Gundam picture, for example, you know, all the little details.
How much can I say about Tengen? Well, actually, Tengen put this up on Facebook, so that's fair game in my opinion.
Okay.
He was complaining about a certain certain thing.
Illustration. Certain illustration?
That he was commissioned to do.
I remember this, yeah.
Yeah. And we all know what it is, like, from the context. They told him, you have to draw it like it, like the product. And he's like, but it doesn't make sense. Like, the product doesn't look as it should. I want to make it, like, look cool. Should I make it look cool, or should I make it look like a product? No, I don't like the product. Make it look like a... Well, why don't I just use a photograph then? He was complaining about this on Facebook. He deleted it shortly afterwards.
Right.
So, you know, you are right. It's totally micromanaged now, and we're lucky we get what we do get.
Right.
I think it's like... people are jumping lots of hurdles to get good art out of there.
So we had Takani and this MC. They did the first floor. They went up to the second floor, did the anime stuff. And as he would do half the floor, then go stand up one end, and everyone would just sit down on the floor. It was almost like being a kindergarten class and having the teacher talk to the group. And then she did something that I kind of winced at, and that was open the floor to questions. This is a scenario where the MC next to the man is kind of yelling the questions at him. And they're going to go pass a microphone around and open the floor up to questions. So I was, like, expecting the worst. It wasn't too bad. We got maybe half a dozen questions. And they were just like, you know, your favorite robot, or what did you think of when you were drawing this? You know, the usual garbage. But then the final question went to an elderly man at the back of the room. And he was standing. And they passed the microphone up to him, and people kind of moved out of his way. And he was of similar age to Takani. He had this bandana on, almost Miyatake looking, except older. And he started talking. And he'd flown all the way from Hokkaido for this exhibit, for this talk show. And he said, I came down because I've been wanting to meet you for at least 30 or 40 years, and I want to thank you. And Takani's like, well, what for? And he said, well, in 1967, I was drawing a manga. It was for Weekly Shonen Sunday. I'd done a few chapters. I was getting, at maximum, 2 or 3 fan mails per issue. And he said he was going to throw in the towel. He'd lined up a job at a company. He was ready to become a regular old businessman and quit the manga industry. But then the editor for the magazine, without his knowledge, went and commissioned Takani to do a cover. And that cover had such an impact on sales that fan response had increased tenfold. And as a result, this manga artist decided not to quit. So he's at this event, he's like, look, I want to thank you, because if you hadn't done that cover for me in 67, I would have quit. Now, who was this guy? This guy was Satoru Ozawa, who is better known as the creator of Blue Submarine No. 6. He's also known as one of the co-creators of the Giant Robo manga. So this is someone who went on to have quite a career in the manga industry, and he would have quit if it hadn't been for Takani's artwork.
But let's get one thing straight. The Giant Robo manga was actually by Yokoyama Mitsuru, right?
But they worked. They have co-credit for the first 12 chapters.
Okay. Right.
And I asked him about it, afterwards. And he said he was largely responsible for a lot of the actual giant robot design and the Egyptian motifs they worked into it. So, and to put this in context, you know, Blue Submarine number 6, the original manga looked a lot more Tezuka-ish and a lot less like the Murata designs in the OVA from the early 2000s, which everyone knows, whereas I don't think the manga's ever come out in English. The manga that the illustration was drawn for was Submarine 707, which is not unknown these days. It's gotten quite a few reprints over the years. But, so yeah, he'd come all the way down here and he'd never gotten the chance to thank Takani over the years, and this was the time they finally got to meet. So
wow, it's kind of crazy that you'd think they wouldn't have met.
Right. You know? And well, apparently, you know, he's just, he's located in Hokkaido. He draws from Hokkaido and just
he's
manga artist. He's always, as far as I know, he's always been busy and he just never had the opportunity. Their paths had never crossed.
Mm.
So I just, it was one of those things. I know it's not Macross related, but I felt really fortunate to just be in the room when this happened. I mean, I was a big fan of Blue Sub number 6, the anime, if not the manga.
It is Macross related because Kawamori worked on it.
On
Blue Submarine number 6, the anime.
What did the Kawamori contribute to?
I don't remember, but he was part of it. Look it up now. You got anything?
Not really.
Oh, well, there you go.
We're sequestered in a theater, Renato.
No, he did some concept designs. I don't know. Not concept design. Like, it was something like Settei Kyoryoku, right? Which means
so
like
helped out with
Ozen ends and things
right.
like that. But I remember because when that came out, when it was first announced, I had a copy of Beat Magazine, which is not it's not a top shelf magazine.
No,
it's the Emotion Bandai Visual magazine promo thing, right? That they give out free, and it had interviews with the main staff like Murata Renge, whom later on I met, and he's a nice guy. He was doing the character designs, but it was mostly a bunch of young people with Kawamori in the background. You know, they had a staff photograph.
Okay.
And you know, Kawamori's tiny face in the back, and I can recognize this dude anyway.
It's like, hey, I know those eyebrows.
Yes, it was. It's really the eyebrows pop out of you.
Who
else was at this thing then?
Well, one final point I'll make, and that was that Ozawa said he actually had come down because he wanted to see the original illustration from the cover of his manga, and it actually wasn't on display at the event.
Oh, really?
So he's like, well, you'll have to put it on display in the next one.
Yes.
Which brings us back, Renato, to what you mentioned earlier. I actually spoke to the organizer of the event afterwards, and he said they are planning another one.
Really?
Now, granted, this is last December, and he was saying they're planning something for next year.
Yeah.
We're now halfway through the next year, and there's been nothing announced yet, so I don't know whether it will happen, but they said they'd gotten a positive enough response to this one that they were thinking of doing another one, that there was a lot more in storage.
Oh yeah, I mean, 60 years of work and like these two tiny rooms are the only spaces to have to display it. I mean, for God's sake, this aquarium exhibition is split into two parts, right? By which I mean, for the first couple of months, it'll be part one, and then after July or August,
they're
going to
show part two.
I'm
wondering if I could be bothered coming back for part two.
Oh, I'm definitely coming back. I have to finish this animation thing that I started. Here you go. I'll hold it up to the microphone so you can see. It's Yunoha. Yunoha. You like Yunoha, right?
It is free, so.
It is free.
So, and afterwards I got an autograph, and I spoke to him briefly. You know, I've got to say, he just seemed happy to be able to interact with so many fans. Like, everyone, you know, we got in line, we shook his hand, and just said, you know, I told him I'd, you know, known his stuff from Macross from back in the day. And I told him I watched it growing up as a kid, and how inspirational, like, you know, his SDF1 was.
Brought me to a different continent.
Oh, that's the story I tell Kawamori and Mikimoto. I didn't want to repeat that a third time.
It's not like he's heard it.
He was just really, you know, happy that, he told me he was really happy that people outside Japan had, you know, heard of his work. He was kind of surprised, and you know, he did mention he doesn't really remember all that much about what he was doing back in those days. But you know, he's been active more recently than I thought. I think the last piece of art they had in that exhibit, the most recent one, was 2009, I think.
Uh-huh.
So it was only at the time 5 years old.
No, I think they've even had more recent ones. Didn't he do something in 2014?
I don't know. Did he?
Sure. Well, let me. We don't have internet here. How lost are we?
Not that we normally use the internet midcast anyway.
No, we never do. No.
Yeah.
But that we have notes. I forgot my notes today. I had them when we weren't recording this. Last time at the Karakuro Cafe.
But so anyway, that is Nanyang the Cafe. Yoshiyuki Takani exhibit.
No. We met one more guy. Yokoyama Ko is the guy who does like the Nutcracker and the. I made sure to say that just as you were taking a drink.
Thank you. Speaking of boys' love.
Oh wait. Is your computer breaking? No, okay. So he does all the gritty hardcore, boys' love stuff. And the last time we met him was at a different exhibition. He was a regular visitor like us at the Tenjin exhibition way back in Shinjuku like 4 or 5 years ago. Remember.
That was for the black cover artwork, right? Book. The book with the black cover, the general Tenjin works?
I think so. Yes. Right. Works, right?
Tenjin
works. Yes, he does. Yeah. Very hot. More than I. So Tenjin was doing the signing and... Yokoyama was there going, oh, hey, is that who you are? And then Yokoyama sits down and does signing of his own. He basically like crashed that party because everyone started going up to him with their own books. Because at that point, his most famous book, at least I think his most famous book, 3D SF. If you don't have that book, you should get it. I don't have it. I should get it.
what is this book?
It's a book of just like photographs of really, really realistic models of his designs, like from Machine and Kruger and stuff like that. But it's a reprint of the book that came out in the early 80s or mid 80s.
Okay.
And so they had reprinted it in 2010 or so, when just around the time when Tenji was doing his exhibition. So he came over there, and people were buying his book. Because this exhibition was at the bookshop.
And
people were picking it up off the shelves next to the Second Sortie book, next to the Works book as well. And they were getting those two to sign their stuff. So he basically just hijacked the whole thing. Anyway, he didn't do that this time, but he came together with Watanabe Max, who is, again, model kit guy. He runs Max Factory, a very famous company. So he remembered us because Yokoyama pointed to me and said, "Hey, you! I remember you." And I said, "Oh, do you?" But then I'm not sure if he doesn't remember me because he said to me, "Yeah, your Japanese is much better now."
What?
Like I was stumbling or stuttering or something, which I probably was, like meeting him the first time. But like, I should just respond by saying, "Yeah, it's because I was so gobsmacked that I was meeting you, stupid."
So Yoshiyuki Takani. Look him up. Look up his work. The man's amazing.
He's so amazing that he attracts other people in the industry when he does.
He inspires people like Tenjin.
Yeah.
Back on February 1, there was a small gig we went to. And Renato, I want you to cast your memory back here.
February
cast your
1.
Mind back. February 1st, it was in Omote Sando. It was Milan Party.
Yeah, Omote Sando Ground, which was the first time, I think, I saw... It was also the venue which... I don't know how to say it. I can't speak English anymore. It was the venue where I saw Milan's voice.
Sakura Tomo?
No, cut that. Chia Kajiura for the first time.
Okay.
Yeah.
What, like, was that where they held her first gig?
The first gig that I went to see,
okay.
At least.
Was it a Milan night?
No, it wasn't. It was one of the laboratory gigs.
Okay.
I think it was probably the first one.
Okay. Well,
anyway,
this is a fan event. This was not officially endorsed in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, yeah. Because if you remember, Milan Night was the...
The Chia Kajiura.
That was kind of semi-official, though. That wasn't official either. Yeah.
Well, it was recognized by fans, but it was all done by someone, i.e. Chia, who was affiliated with the franchise.
Yeah.
Whereas,
but at first they had, like, Tenjin illustrations and stuff like that.
And Mickey Moto illustrations.
Yeah. Not anymore.
And then there was all the fallout from that, the adult circumstances.
Yes.
As we've discussed in the past. Yeah. And as a result, the fans got together and decided to hold their own event, which is kind of amazing, I thought. And so as a fan event, this was a really fascinating thing to be at. I first heard about this at the Macross 2 screening last year, because we're in the screening. We'd just gotten actually Jason Klein and Cheryl off the plane from the airport into the cinema. It was pouring rain, and we're sitting there, and in the intermission...
Wouldn't it be funny if in the in-flight movie they'd seen Macross 2?
Plane crashes.
Like, oh, no, don't say that.
And these two girls sitting in front of me turn around in the intermission, like, hi. I'm like, oh, yeah, I've seen you guys at some events. And they're like, yeah, don't tell anyone, but we're planning a Milan party. So, you know, keep an eye out for news, you'll have to come. I'm like, okay, yeah. And that was...
What do you mean, don't tell anyone? Isn't that the opposite of marketing?
Well... How do I put it? Don't tell anyone official. Like, as they hadn't announced it yet.
Okay.
So once they announced it, of course, it went out. But they hadn't announced it, and they were like, you know, we're trying to line up guests, hint, hint.
Yeah.
But, you know, keep it under your hat. And then I think maybe 2 months after that, they came out with this flyer, mm-hmm. which I'm holding up to the mic.
Yeah.
And they were distributing this, like, everywhere. Like, at the Firebomber gig at the end of last year, they were out there distributing... flyers for their fan Milan concert.
Yeah, so they were distributing it at the end of the Chia gig last year, and I was wondering, is she approve this? And then when I look at the list of things that they're going to do, she's in it.
Exactly.
Right?
They invited Chia to do a couple of songs. Now, we'll get to Chia in a moment.
Well, this is how they describe her, though. It says here on the front of the flyer, special guest, singer and candle artist. Which one of those things do you think she's more famous for? Which profession?
At the moment, probably candles. So, this isn't the first fan event like this we've been to. The last one of this scale was the Macross Sound Attack.
Oh, yeah. That was really good. Did we podcast on that?
I know we mentioned it. A few times.
That was awesome.
That was amazing, right? Now, there were a lot of people involved
Macross
in that
music.
That were also involved in this, but I want to say the music was nowhere near as high caliber this time around, but it wasn't... Half the people organizing this event were fans and cosplayers, whereas Macross Sound Attack was 100% musicians.
Yeah, definitely.
That was
I mean, there was some cosplay as well, but the music was fantastic.
Right. Especially the Macross Plus stuff.
Yeah. They had, like, what, the Borderline, these crazy songs that you've never heard?
They had this whole set, a huge set. They did
everything. They did
Want
to Be an Angel. They did
more Macross Plus than we've ever gotten in an official concert.
Yeah, which isn't hard.
This is true.
What have you ever had apart from Voices?
This had really good production values, and I was kind of amazed that there were so many people jumping up on this stage. The people I knew from fan club events and cosplay events, but then there were some people I recognized from Macross Sound Attack. For example, the backing vocalists were originally from Hyokotai, which were the Yoko Kano fan club, and they were also the backing vocalists in that Macross Plus section of Macross Sound Attack.
Yeah, that's
we also had Teshima Explosion turn up, which was the Macross 7 cover band, which turned up to Macross Sound Attack. But they had a second, actually a third, new vocalist who'd come up from Osaka and knew the owner of the Firebomb Bar. And that was that young guy with the... He was supposed to be the busser from the Dynamite Explosion single cover with the black... With the straps over his chest and the black
the giant suspenders over the net
they split the concert into a bunch of times themes. They opened up with a bunch of girls who I know mostly from their cosplay work, and they did a bunch of covers. In fact, the interesting thing about this, it wasn't all Milan songs. You know, I mean, they did songs from the original Macross. They did Plus. They did Macross 2.
Yeah.
We got a Macross 2 song. And the funny thing about the Macross 2 song, it was the only song that the singer kind of botched up.
Yeah, I remember that.
She flubbed her lines a few times.
And she even said, well, I don't know, I haven't seen it. How I do. Something like that.
Well, afterwards, I saw her like in the lobby, and I approached her. I said, you do realize the biggest Macross 2 fan in the world was in the audience.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh my god, tell him I'm sorry. So Adrian, she's sorry. But the point is, we got Macross from all the series.
Yeah.
We even got some Macross Zero.
Do we?
Yeah. I think we got, was it Arkan?
Oh, yeah. That was pretty good too.
Yeah, we got Arkan.
In fact, it must be really good, because that's a really hard song to sing.
Right, no, exactly. So, we also, of course, had Hisame come out and do some songs with some backing vocals.
We had Teshima Explosion, those guys, they had their YF-19 cosplay as well.
Let's explain him. First time around, back at Macross Sound Attack, we want to point out, one of their two main vocalists sings in a Fire Valkyrie costume.
Yeah, yeah.
With light-up eyes and everything. But this time around, we didn't just have one Valkyrie on stage.
We had the Milan Valkyrie, too.
Right, and the girl who was in that, she often does... she often cosplays as... What did she call it? Emilia. I've seen her cosplay
at
Firebomber gigs and things like that. All right, we have to wrap it up.
Yeah. Ignas, hey.
All right, so we have been thrown out of the Suginami Animation Museum because it was closing time, not because I was drinking coffee in the theatre. And I believe we were talking about the Milan Party, Renato. We're currently walking towards the station. And
How far did we get?
Well, I think we're talking about the music we got on it. So we got we got Macross, we got 2, we got 0 with Arkansas. Yes, that thing. And as I said, we had a singer come up from Osaka. We had Teshima Explosion with some great T-shirts. They had the pink Milan Party T-shirts.
Well, they had great T-shirts at the first one as well, the Sound Attack,
right?
Like 5 years ago.
Right.
They had the yellow and red Fire Valkyrie thing with the Teshima Explosion. The T was the 7 from Macross 7 or something.
Right.
Those guys are good at designing shirts.
And their Macross 7 covers are not bad either.
They're excellent.
I mean, they tend to have more of
a
group vibe going because they have several vocalists. And as I was mentioning before, one of their female vocalists, who often dresses up as Emilia, I think there are 3 males now and 1 or 2 females. So they've got more vocalists than musicians, which is kind of interesting. Yeah. So we had them. Hisame did some stuff. We had these girls at the beginning do all these older Macross songs. And then, of course, we had Chia come out. Yeah, Chia did, like, literally 2 songs before then calling up... Well, she did 2 songs with no backing, no instrument. Well, they were done to basically a cassette recorder. Yeah, sure, I'm sure she used a cassette, right?
Yeah.
Oh, this place got noisy
fast. They do in 2045.
This is true. Videos as well, if we go by FB7.
Yeah, but they do have iPads too.
This is true. So then she did 2 songs, but then she was like, okay, I want to get the other band members to come up and do a song with me. And apparently she'd only decided this just before she did her set, and there'd been no rehearsal or anything. And so she got a couple of band members and one guy to sing the Fukuyama part And they did Virgin Story.
Yeah. I would have volunteered, but I don't know, there was some reason why I didn't. I don't know. Because I don't know the lyrics to Virgin Story. You know?
It's a little bit too new.
It's too new for me. I need to have listened to it for 20 years.
It wasn't a bad version, though, and
I
think...
It was really good.
I think the guy pulled himself off... He performed better than Chia's regular guitarist, bassist, who does the role for her of Kiyama when she does it in her solo gigs.
Yeah. Well...
Because that guy...
I don't know. I mean, I wasn't there for that, okay, that one, but I remember you talking about it on the podcast,
right,
previously.
So, and yeah, that was about it. It was a fairly long gig, like three and a half hours all up, and... It was all about the fans celebrating Milan and Macross 7. They had fan art in the form of postcards, which they gave out to people. They had badges.
One thing kind of sucks that you weren't allowed to take photographs of Chia Kajiura, but everything else was okay, wasn't it?
You could record, film, take pictures of everything you wanted, except Chia.
Yeah, and like, for the people who... Well, for the guy who was... given a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to perform a duet with Chia Kajiura, that would have been quite a downer, don't you think?
Yeah.
I guess maybe it sweetens the experience a bit more.
I'm sure there's probably a recording there that the venue was set up to record stuff. It will probably never get out, but there's probably a way he could get his hands on it, I'd say. But we couldn't record anything with Chia in it, you know.
No.
But as I was saying, it was all about the fans. They even had the... There's one fan who turns up to Wonderfest with custom-made Macross baseball caps. And the first ones I saw him do were the Mega Road. And this time he had the Macross 7 one. And they are not dissimilar to the SDF1 caps that a certain other company in the US sells, but way better quality. And they're really nice, you know. And yeah.
There's a guy there, Eric, that I think Adrian dragged him to this thing. I don't remember where they met, but he was wearing a UN Spacey jacket that he had custom made himself, I think, and you know, had all this Velcro like badges and stuff on it. And Adrian said, "Hey, there's this gig. Do you want to go?" And he said, "All right." So I met him there.
Right.
He's a cool guy.
And I believe he recorded a chunk of the concert as well.
Oh, so, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. We've singled him out now. Cops are going to be on him.
But yeah, so that was Milan Party.
57 police.
I will throw some photos from it up along with this podcast. And it was just a really great gathering of the fans to celebrate all things Macross 7. And it really goes to show what an impact the one entry in the series, which is maybe the most controversial outside of Japan, has had and continues to have within Japan.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Most of the cosplay now is either Macross 7 or Macross Frontier, and it's not from the original series.
Right.
Or barely plus, you know. It's, you know, it's still got a lot of fans. I still see lots and lots of fan art to this day. You know, and Chie and Fukuyama are still performing regularly, and they're remembered. So, yeah, it's very, very current still.
All right, so let's take a break here.
One more thing I want to... One more thing. While you were getting your coffee, I noticed that actually the shop in the animation museum... was selling Macross goods. Did you notice that?
Was it?
You were looking at me with your eyes. Why did you tell me this before? Like, well, just a couple of things. Like, they were selling a Skull Squadron, like a coin purse thing.
Oh,
very,
yeah.
So you can be a very manly woman or a very womanly man. And you can also buy, I think they're key rings with Skull Squadron markings or something. Are you in Spacey markings?
Those are the Cosper ones, branded ones, yeah.
All right, well, I don't know.
Okay. Fair enough.
Well, that's my report. That's what I found out while you were getting your coffee.
All right, well, look, let's take a break here, Renato, and jump back about 2 weeks to the Nyan Nyan Cafe. Well, it's May 24th, which means we've got exactly 1 week left before the Nyanyan Cafe closes here in Ikebukuro in Tokyo. Don't call this a podcast, because it's not, but we just happen to be sitting here because, heck, the place closes in a week, so I'm going to make the best of it while we can. Who have I got next to me?
Renato, also known as Renato. Save you the trouble of making that joke.
One joke wonder.
Phaedron, also known as Save.
Indiana Macros.
And it's going to be really noisy here, which is why this isn't going to be a podcast, or not a whole podcast, at least. You can hear all the Macross trailers and whatnot going off behind me, but we just thought we'd have a quick catch-up on what's been going on with everyone's Macross life as of late. But Renato, you had something rather big happen recently.
What's that?
Cheer.
Oh, okay. Well,
what's that?
Well, I don't know. That's plenty of big things happening. So the other day, I decided to try out for one of those vocal lessons that Chie Kajiro was offering.
Well, let's explain this a bit, because people might not realize that she's offering lessons.
Yeah, but I just explained that.
She's offering lessons. She's so offering lessons. When did this happen? What's the deal?
I think you subscribe to it as well. Subscribe to Chie Kajiro's newsletter. Where she tells us when she's going to be performing, what time, where, etc. And she often, you know, includes little information at the bottom, like the kind of new candles that she's going to be selling and new jewelry that she's going to be flogging on. So I'm always more interested in that than the actual gigs, because I hear about the gigs from you and Hisame and, you know, all these people surrounding us anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, so... a few weeks ago, I realized that she was actually offering vocal lessons. I enjoy singing. And in recent, like in the last year or so, I've noticed that my voice is changing. And it's probably because I'm working...
You're going through puberty.
Yes, probably, yes.
Yeah. It used to be like this. Oh, you're ignorant.
Why did the music stop when I just did that? Everyone can hear me now. I work more as a lecturer than I did before. I have more hours, I have more lessons per week now, and I've noticed that my voice is getting coarser and I can't hit as many notes as I could before. Not only would I get to meet Milene, I would also get to have her teach me how to sing. Who gets a cartoon character to teach them how to sing? No one, right? So I thought I'd try out for one, you know, kind of like just to get some advice, not just on allowing me to sing the songs that I want to sing, but also to not let my voice get as tired as it does after hour and upon hour after an hour of constant lecturing, because I have to talk rather loud.
So you sing your lectures.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's
good. All right. I don't sing my lectures. But actually, that might be the problem, which is part of the advice that she gave me. Apparently, singing and talking are different. Obviously, I knew that, but they put different strains on your voice.
Sounds like money well spent. How much did this set you back?
I'm not going to talk about money on the podcast. But you know what? Lesson of Valkyrie. How about that? There you go.
Well, there are many things out there that are less money than a Valkyrie.
Yeah, you're right about that. Unfortunately. Oh, announcement.
We're being interrupted.
Well, this Karakuro Cafe is kind of interesting.
Well, it's last order for food and buying merchandise, so you too can have a picture of Michelle in a butler's outfit with Clan. But
yeah, but apart from all that crazy stuff, there's also like weird mini events. Like they had that guy... raffle.
Let's discuss the cafe once we've finished your cheer experience. Your close encounters with Milene.
I'll wait for her to finish talking.
She's done.
Is she done?
Mm-hmm. She's not done.
Oh, Delta, Delta.
Uh-oh, it's someone's birthday here at the Nyanyan Cafe. This is not good. This is... oh, boy. We have a birthday message.
Grandma,
We have a very disgruntled guy getting a rank birthday message and parfait.
Did that guy who tapped him on the shoulder know him?
Because he's from a different table. I think they're fellow fans.
Yeah, yeah.
So are we.
Happy birthday!
Really?
Oh.
All right, back to it. So, cheer. What did this vocal lesson entail, Renato?
Well, first of all, she sent me an email saying, all right, thanks for the application. First of all, you have to tell me what songs do you want to sing. So I didn't really think too hard about it, other than I had been going to... I have not been going to karaoke as much as I used to do. And the few times that I did in the last few months, I've noticed that I wasn't able to hit all the notes that I wanted to hit, so my voice is really changing, as I was saying.
So what did you tell her you want to sing?
Well, I chose three songs, because I didn't know how many she said, because Japanese don't use plurals, right? So I didn't know if it was one. If it was one, I don't know what to choose. But if it was three, then I'd just choose songs which I know I'd have problems hitting all the notes.
Okay, so
I
chose... X-Japan.
No. You can just do all that in falsetto. Boston's More Than a Feeling. There you go. Michael Jackson's Man in the Mirror. What's the third one? Oh, it's Bon Jovi, Living on a Prayer.
All things that you can imagine Milan singing.
Well, she's not going to sing, I'm going to sing. She's not a badger, man. She doesn't have four legs.
Whatever. Anyway.
Anyway, where was I? Oh, yeah, so I chose three songs.
Yep.
And I went to karaoke earlier this week to try and practice them.
Okay.
For the first 10 minutes or so, I had my usual crappy voice. And, I wasn't hitting all the notes that I could before. But then, I don't know what happened. Maybe I just had a lot of alcohol. But I started singing really well. And I thought, hey, you know what? These songs are actually quite easy. Like, Living on a Prayer, I aced that one, home run. So then I'll just put in more difficult stuff that I couldn't sing before, and maybe I can sing now. So I put in Hummingbird, Get Free, all that kind of crazy crap. And you know that song, right?
Did you just call Hummingbird crap?
No, it's crazy crap. It's crap in a good sense. You know, I gotta get my crap together. VFX 2 opening, right? That song. In case the people at home listening to this podcast don't know. This not podcast, sorry.
It's not podcast.
Not podcast. That was... I think I did pretty well, to my ears. That I pretty much hit that with no complaints.
All right.
From my wife, who was there at the time.
So then you went to cheer, and what did cheer tell you?
Well, she said, all right, let's hear it. And then I sang like the worst I've ever sang. It was awful. It was like, you know, I did all right on Tuesday, and she was like, yeah, these. Let's choose one from here, because she told me beforehand that we'd try the three of them, but then we'd choose one to concentrate because it's a very limited time. It's only 1 hour. The one I sang the best on my practice run was the Bon Jovi song, but this one. This time it was terrible, so she said, all right, you can put that one away, we won't be doing that one today. And I'm like, but that was the one that I could do. Like, I'm sure if I have a couple of... And she said, no, you're gonna completely bust up your voice.
I did not argue with cheer.
So I said, all right. She said, well, do you want to do Michael Jackson or do you want to do the other one? And I said, let's just concentrate on Boston first, because it's a short song, and I know it better than the Michael Jackson one, because it doesn't have all this ad-lib stuff at the end. I said, all right. She was giving me advice on like how to get my voice out more and stuff, but actually she said that I don't really have too many problems with my voice. It's more the rhythm, which is something that I had thought was a problem, but not as much as the pro would know.
Okay, so
she said to me, yeah, your main problem is that, you know, you've got the feeling there, but...
Were you hooked on it?
Yes. But, yeah, I know. I acknowledge your joke. It's just not funny. But you don't have the foundation there. You're kind of like all over the place sometimes. And you can improvise here and there, but it needs to have a stable foundation. And you don't have that because you're lacking a sense of rhythm. Show me the rhythm. And like she was telling me to clap on the beats. And I was clapping on the wrong beats, you know, instead of 1-2, 1-2. I was clapping on 1-2, 1-2. And I've never had any of that kind of training, but I do know that when I go to concerts and you have some numbers where people, you know, the artists are saying, come on, everybody, clap. And I always, 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 for some reason, clap on the beats that no one else is clapping on. And I try to fix it, but I end up doing the alternate route as usual. I don't know why. And so I told her this, and I said, yeah, it's kind of like something that I have, but I didn't think it was that big of a problem. And she said, no, it is a problem. And I was like, all right then, so what do I do? And she was giving me all this advice, and you got to have like this thing. So she was clapping, and I had to carry on clapping along according to the beat. She said, forget about the lyrics, don't even bother with the thing. You need to make sure that you've got this down as a kind of like a... like an instinctive thing. And I was like, oh, okay, I was doing that for a while.
Okay.
But yeah, it is a bigger problem. And it, yeah, and then she said something really interesting, which is something with, you know Yurika-san, right? The singer.
Yeah.
So I performed a duet with her about a year ago. Like, yeah. We sang some Marvin Gaye, Ain't No Mountain High Enough or something. So this is a girl who is quite young, but she's quite professional. She's not quite professional. She is a professional, literally. But when we did the rehearsal... Okay, I'll stop. Hang on.
Okay, so when I did this duet.
Yeah, when I did the rehearsal with this girl, Yurika-san, she was telling me the same thing. And I thought, all right, I'll work on it. But even though, you know, she's a pro as well, you know, I guess because she's young, I didn't think it was so authoritative, and I didn't think it was so important, because I was singing the song all right, no problems. I didn't hear any complaints either when we went up on stage and did it. But yeah, I mean, Che was saying, yeah, this is a real issue, and you gotta do some training on that. So that's what we mostly concentrated on. So, and then she said, this is the interesting thing that she said, that if you do sing in this style with the Urano beat, like the alternate, yeah, the secondary beats, then it sounds like a J-pop song, and you don't want that. And then I'm like, what do you mean? And she's like, well, you know. I think you probably go to these kind of concerts, but like you want it to sound like a yogaku song, like a Western pop song, because it's Boston, right? So you know you're probably used to the alternate beats because you listen to a lot of J-pop. And I'm like, I don't listen to a lot of J-pop. No, I go to all sorts of different concerts. The only Japanese pop songs I listen to is you. And she was like, really? And I was like, yeah, I just came back from I had gone to a flamenco concert. The previous night, and flamenco is all about the, you know, the clapping and the beats, and I found myself doing, you know, the wrong clapping rhythm as well that night. And I told her this, and she was like, yeah, that's kind of weird. And I said, yes, especially because I'm South American as well, so I should be, it should come as second nature to me, but it doesn't. And she was like, okay, well, then, you know, you don't want to make it sound like a Japanese song, because I have Japanese students in my lessons, because, you know, she teaches at a music college as well, music university, so she has weekly lessons, and her students are the exact opposite of what I go, and when she does these vocal lessons as well, like, these are open, private ones, not part of the university, obviously. All her students, all the people who go and apply for these lessons, they don't have the feeling, but they do have the rhythm technique, right? And I've got the feeling, but I ain't got no rhythm technique. She was nice about it. She sent me an email. Definitely, because she sent me an email giving me suggestions on what metronomes to buy and stuff like that. So I'm going to work on that.
So will you be going to another lesson with Chia, or was this just a one-off try-it-and-see thing?
Eventually. This was a this was a one of try and see thing, as well as being, I could actually make it on this day at this time. You know, she's got very, very limited windows. So if, you know, if it falls on the correct date and time, then yeah, I might go again. But I won't go unless I've had a bit more practice, because I don't want her telling me the exact same thing.
Oh yeah, behind us they're playing Macross 2 on the opening. The opening to Macross 2 on this huge projector, which I think means it's time to leave, right? They're telling everyone to get the hell out.
Last call for taste. Last call for taste.
All right, well, let's address the pink Vajra in the room, which is, we're at the Nyan Nyan Cafe. It's extremely noisy. Renato, it's your first time here. Adrian, you've been here twice before?
Twice.
I've been here probably 4 or 5 times.
Is the toilet interesting?
The toilet's got the mirror set up so you can do a selfie print club, pretty much. It's got a frame with Michelle and Clan Clan on it.
I'm going to check it out, but I'm taking no selfies.
Alright. So, Adrian, you've been here before, but I mean, what's your take on the Nyan Nyan Cafe? What do you think of the place?
Well, I mean, it's like as if the crossover concert threw up on itself in a very small room. It's got some charm, but it's mostly just pushing product.
Right.
Yeah, but, and it just seems to be a big hangout for the Tokyo-based Macross fans, because in the 2 times I've been here, I've recognized the same person twice, or the 3rd time being here. And I think, when did they start this cafe?
It was about 9 or 10 months ago. Normally they run for like 6 months is the contract for the company that runs these things, but it was popular enough that they extended it by 3 or 4 months.
But it's run by Namco, right?
I don't know. I just know it's the same company that did the recent Sailor Moon Cafe. They do a bunch of different character-themed cafes.
I have a funny feeling it's... I think it is Namco.
Oh, yeah, it is. Look, right here.
Yeah.
Okay, and Namco.
I think this restaurant didn't pop up until after they closed the... dessert and food floor above Namja Town, which was ran by Namco, and now it's J World.
Okay.
So I think they split from that to opening one here and one in Akihabara. So
Renato, first of all, tell us about the bathroom.
Well, the bathroom had Japanese calligraphy scroll on it, which you sometimes see on Japanese companies, which is basically the creed of SMS. So it's got number one, your health is the most important thing. Number two, if you're going to fly, don't drink. Number three, number four, and then like the last one is, do you remember love? So that's kind of cool.
So Renato, being your first time here, what do you think of the Nyan Nyan Cafe? I mean, have you been to many themed cafes before?
I went to the Thunderbirds Cafe a while back. Like, Tokyo is kind of full of these cafes, and they're kind of well hidden as well, so
they also tend to pop up and disappear really quickly. Whereas they have the Fire Bombard down in Osaka, which is there permanently, or as long as they can keep it going.
Yeah, well, that's because it's a private owned thing. That's not a tie up with anything.
So what do you think of this place? Tell people what you're looking at.
It's alright. If you're a Frontier fan, it's probably really cool. It's mostly about Frontier. All the character rights, Frontier. All the toys of Frontier. Oh, except for 155s. So they've got a couple of them. That's probably because I think Bandai provided all the toys, so they can't get like 148s and stuff. The posters are like photoshopped posters of background out from Frontier that makes it look like a real flyer during the Frontier era. Like, that's the Frontier Tourism Agency poster right there, which has that nice background shot of the city, San Francisco, whatever it's called. Lots of big SMS and Fire Bomber and Lin Min Mei signs. I like the giant projection wall here at the back. But yeah, they only play real Frontier stuff, and Macross 2 sometimes.
Right, yeah, starting last week, there's 3 sessions in the evenings where they're playing the Frontier movies. And those booked up before I could even try to get in.
But in their entirety?
Yeah, in their entirety. Yeah. But given the resolution of this screen, as you can see, I didn't really want to watch the movie on it.
Yeah.
But, you know, either way, filled up. And this entire last week, it's looking pretty full. Adrian and I have managed, via some wheelings and dealings, to get in during the last night. But it's completely booked up officially for last night. So fans are coming by to give the place a send-off. Because what I'd love to be a fixture in Tokyo, because we don't have a firebomb bar, is unfortunately going to end.
Did you already talk about the voting? Okay, so they have some mini events. Like one of them is you get a coin whenever you order something, and if you put it in this machine, you're allowed to vote for apparently various things. Today we were allowed to vote for the song that you want to be used in later Macross production.
I'm sorry, Renato, we're under attack.
Alarm bells. Darn those Vajra. I like the he apologizes for an emergency.
So we are getting a custom briefing here from Captain Jeffrey Wilder, saying he needs our help to defeat the Vajra Queen from Wings of Farewell. Kittens, Renato. Kittens.
That's not in my version. That's not my canon.
So this is kind of interesting because they merge different scenes from the Wings of Farewell to make it a shorter version of the final battle.
Well, they use some footage from the TV show as well.
Right. So originally, they used to make a sing here. They used to make the entire cafe sing.
Right? Oh, really?
But they don't anymore.
Because it gets rowdy.
We've got lots of footage of Alto in his 29 at the moment.
But why have we got a little window in the corner?
So they're overlapping the singing parts and the battle parts. So instead of cutting between
them, they're both battle parts.
Well, they're just re-editing it so it's like a best of. So you get the whole battle with none of the plot.
Oh wait, but look. They split this up there.
Yeah, true.
So the missile trails in this scene are all hand-drawn, by the way. It's not CG, yeah. I learned that by looking at the extra DVD on the Shulista box set. Buy it!
DVD?
Oh, Blu-ray, sorry. What is that word still doing in my vocabulary? Kittens!
Kittens!
That is it. We win.
We will win. his eyes. Guys, his eyes looking at me. Is that new art?
Not for the cafe, but... It's a Wings of the Wall.
No, of course.
Cafe and Bar Nyan Nyan Go. Oh, just a daily chasse de culture. We see Nyan. That's what you want.
Alright, that was worthy. Anyways.
Well, we're being teased by all these Bandai Valkyries around here, like I was saying, because, you know, Bandai doesn't produce them in enough numbers.
But, so yeah, that is the Nyan Nyan Cafe. Now that we've been interrupted, and I don't know how I'm going to edit this if I do at all, because that was a long segment of us listening to music. But my only real issue with the place, having been to many, many themed cafes in Tokyo, is the food here is probably the most expensive I've ever had at a themed cafe. You have two or three drinks and maybe one dessert, and you're out 3,000, 4,000 yen.
Well, I thought that was kind of par for the course. Like, all macro stuff is overpriced, really.
Yeah, but, I mean, I've been to, like... You know, you go to the Gundam Cafe, it's cheaper than this. Yeah, but... And we must point out, Renato, as you're looking at now, whenever you order a drink, though, you get a custom-made coaster.
Yes, which I have in my hand right now.
And certain desserts and whatnot have, stickers. And we got a free postcard walking in, which was a closing postcard to commemorate the closing of the cafe. Yeah. So, we've only got a week to go. But anyway, that's the Nyan Nyan Cafe. Folding out.